You're listening to Rosie and BJ Save the World, the podcast that shares and explores the most important issues of our century, our decade. I'm not sure. Very important issues. I'm here with my very, very, very lovely, lovely co-host, BJ Mendelson. I'm comedian Rosie Tran. BJ, how are you?
I'm good. Since we last talked, I got my haircut.
So... Oh, that's good.
So I'm a contender again for lovely, I think. Maybe this week I'll qualify for it.
Hilarious. So our topic today is open borders. And I just want to give full disclosure to the listeners. This is not a topic that I'm extremely knowledgeable about, although I have read up on it per my co-host, BJ Mendelson. So you recommended the book Utopia for Realist.
Yes.
Which I loved. And there was a lot of interesting information that I already knew, but also new information that I learned about a universal basic income and a shorter work week and automation and things that we've talked about in the past in this podcast. But I have to say, I felt that his chapter on open borders was a little weak compared to the rest of the book. And so I'm still a little confused. I do agree. So what he did was he put out a lot of the arguments against open borders and then kind of like bullshitted them.
Yeah.
He's like, this is why this doesn't make sense. And that information was good. And I definitely appreciated him dispelling some of the racist and other political motivations behind closed borders. But I felt like he didn't make a good case for the actual opening of borders. So I am totally deferring to your expertise on this, but I'm happy to discuss and learn on this podcast as well as just giving my opinion. But I felt that we can go over some of the reasons against open borders that he dispels, which I think are great. But again, I didn't feel a strong pro open borders argument, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, yeah, it's definitely the shortest. I don't want to say it's for a fact that it's like the shortest chapter, but it feels like the shortest chapter in the book. And you also have to remember that he's over in the European Union, so their concept of open borders, you know, is a little different from what we would be talking about, where I'm saying there should be no border whatsoever. And instead that they kind of have, hold on one second. I'm going to close Slack. So his concept of open borders and the way it would work over there is they kind of have open borders now, like with the European Union. You can freely, well, pre-Brexit.
Except for Brexit.
Like, yeah.
Except for London. Yeah, the UK, excuse me.
Right, and the book was written like pre-Brexit. But like basically you can move around freely within the European Union as long as you are part of the member country, which is sort of what his approach was. But my approach is more there should be no border between the United States and Canada. And no border between the United States and Mexico. And it's sort of like more of a free-for-all than what I think he was envisioning. But I'm curious to hear what your opinion is first before we...
Okay, so one of the arguments that he gave was that there is a lot of securitization of the border that is basically useless and a waste of money. And I kind of agree with that because... I know right now there's talk about securing, you know, the southern border and drug dealers are going to come in and blah, 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 blah. And as you know, or as maybe the listeners don't know, but the majority of illegal immigrants don't come in through the border. They fly in on legal visas and then overstay their visa. So basically he's saying that is a waste of money. And as you know, I am an advocate for effective government. You know, a lot of people say, well, you know, the right is for small government. The left is for big government. And I don't necessarily agree with that, but I think that who cares if it's big or small? Is it effective? So that's what I care about. You know, I'm kind of a self-labeled quasi-libertarian, quasi-socialist, which are opposites, but I don't care if it's big or small government as long as it's effective. And so when he says, hey, we're wasting all this money securing a border where people aren't really sneaking in and out, then I do think that if it's a waste of money and it's not working, hey, get rid of it. That's my opinion.
Yeah, no, and I think that if you were to look at the southern border today, it certainly fits that criteria of it's not working, let's get rid of it.
Especially the militarization of it, I think.
Right.
I'm against the extreme militarization of anything. And, you know, we have guys down there with guns blazing and it's too intense, I think, for the actual number of people that are crossing back and forth. And it's definitely not the most efficient use of resources. And I think I agreed with him on his point that there is a lot of illegal activity that's being funded due to this, you know, the coyotes, the paying people to sneak in and out, this illegal, I guess I would kind of, I see it kind of like the drug trade, how because of our legal drug trade, you know, just like prohibition, we're creating this mafia type of atmosphere where because something is illegal, we're actually creating more of a dangerous environment. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it definitely does. And the thing about opening the southern border is that you would eliminate the need for the coyotes in the first place, right? So a lot of the ancillary crime involving getting people back and forth over the border and the shady characters that you might encounter that are dangerous to those people who want to come here, they're unemployed, you know, day one, as soon as you say anyone can come into the United States. So, that's already a net positive in that respect. But
so I do want to make it clear, though, BG, before you go on, that I am not 100% on board to your open borders, and I'm not advocating for that because I don't want the listeners. I'm still unsure. So, however, what you said is true. Okay.
Yeah, no, I'm 100% for open borders. I think we should, just from a humanitarian point of view, we need to do it. From an environmental point of view, especially with climate change, we need to do it because most of the people, as we talked about on the show, are going to be hit the hardest, the ones that are closer to the equator. And that's where you're going to see a lot of climate refugees. So just if we're just talking about climate change alone, we need to be able to provide an escape route for those people who are going to be inundated with severe heat and flooding, which is what, you know, that's one of the things that fascinates me about the open borders discussion, right, is that there's a lot of different ways that you can talk about this and approach it. But I find, I know people get crazy when I say this, but I find universally that if you just apply enough logic to the question of whether or not there should be a border, the answer more often than not is no, there really shouldn't be.
And what is the argument, maybe not your argument, but the argument for that? And you're saying people get crazy when you say that. So I guess talk a little bit more about that. I'm just trying to understand the issue. To me, I never had a strong opinion for or against it. I do agree with the author in Utopia Fearless that there is a lot of racism that is behind the immigration and border issue. And so that is something that definitely colors the issue for sure. I mean, I totally agree. There's a lot of fear of racism. There's a lot of fear of criminality. So I did agree with that point, but I never had a strong opinion either or. I mean, my parents are immigrants and they came here legally as refugees for political asylum and religious asylum. So I am pro-immigrant, but I do agree that there needs to be some security, but I guess I don't have a strong opinion either way, and so I'm interested to hear.
Yeah, well, I mean, so there's a couple different places to start, right? Like when I say that there's no border, people immediately picture like this like lawless boom town, like they
lawless
saw
orgy, the wild west.
Right. And that's not to say that like crime prevention is going to go away. If anything, I think it would enhance the need for cooperation between the federal Mexican officials and the federal United States officials to crack down on any of the cartels and things of that nature. So I'm not suggesting that ends. But what I am suggesting is that the ability for, and we're mostly going to talk about Mexico, right? Because the joke is that if you're anywhere along the northern border, you can cross over, and half the time, no one's going to notice.
We are the Mexico of Canada. Nobody cares if you come down here from Canada. We're like, the Mexico of Canada.
The only thing you have to do if you cross the Peace Bridge from the Canadian side to the American side is you need to bring some quarters with you. There's this stupid booth that you have to put the quarters in.
They don't want us. They're trying to keep us out. Is that what's going on?
No. You can walk. The funny thing is that you can walk right into Canada, and they could not give less of a shit that you're there. But if you come into the American side, that's where you see like the barbed wire and the large fences. And
but that's how it is down south. If I drive into Mexico, I don't need, and like nobody cares.
Right. Yeah. Right? It's just us that
coming back like, in.
Yeah, and so, you know, throughout the history of the United States, we had open borders until about the 1850s, and really it picked up after the Civil War, but it started in the 1850s when you looked at the California Gold Rush, the way that we were cheating the Chinese migrants, people who were very racist, felt that they were being overwhelmed by them. And that's when we started to say, all right, well, now we have a border. You know, now, like, we're going to have immigration quotas and all this nonsense. But before that, you know, anyone that wanted to be in the United States can come to the United States. And so I kind of want us to get back to that. So, but I think it's important to highlight, like, the concept of the border is a fairly new concept in terms of, like, our history as a country. It is not something that was there since the beginning. It was not something that Thomas Jefferson and George Washington wrote about. And it probably wasn't really something that Lincoln even thought about, although, you know, it was really after the Civil War where
That southern border was always changing. It changed during the Mexican-American War. It changed during, there was multiple periods of that border shifting up, shifting down, shifting back up.
That's right. And yeah, I mean, at one point, Texas was its own country.
It kind of still is.
Yeah, I still feel strongly that maybe they should have kept their shit to themselves. That's just me, though, having gone and spent time in Texas. And yeah, like, you're from Louisiana, so.
Isn't that the saying of the state of Texas? Texas, it's a whole other country. Remember they had that campaign running like Texas, it's a whole other country. It's like, it kind of is.
It really is like its own fucking place. But yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, the United States was playing footsie in terms of militarization of the southern border throughout our territorial expansion. So it, you know, but again, the idea of that you could just cross into Texas or what became Texas was like a totally fine thing. It wasn't until we started to get kind of racist in terms of like white supremacy and eugenics and things of that nature, the way we started to really crack down on immigration. So just from like a moral standpoint, I don't think that the border needs to be there. Like it just seems kind of arbitrary to have it. I mean,
that's kind of a philosophical point of view though, because all borders are, there's no reason to be there. If you think about, I mean, look at the collapse of the USSR, right? How many times did that European map change in the 90s? Right.
No, that's true.
They're all arbitrary, right? If you go up to space and you look down, it's just a block of land. There's no line there.
Yeah, I mean, well, in the case of the United States and Mexico, you've got the Rio Grande, and up in Canada, you've got like the St. Lawrence Seaway. So, I mean, there are like physical borders in some parts. I'm definitely making a philosophical argument because I think a lot of this is going to kind of rest on that. Like, you know, what is the point of this thing that we've set up that wastes our time, wastes our money, wastes our resources, and really is just an excuse to persecute people for the sake of like furthering your own political cause.
And you think that's what's going on with the border wall and the securitization of the southern border?
Because we're about the same age, right?
I'm younger.
I'm old. I'm old. But throughout my entire life, you know, like I've just constantly been bombarded about hearing immigration reform and the immigration from Mexico. And like it's been used going back to World War II as a way to garner, you know, political support to say, you know, we're tough on immigration, which is really code for we're tough on brown people. So
I actually think immigration, a lot of people are going to be really pissed when I say this, and you might be pissed too. I actually think immigration is what I call a fake issue. So what I call fake issues are, there are certain issues that I consider, I don't want to call them real versus fake because that's insulting to people that have struggled to get into the country. But real issues are, I would say, like the economy, certain things like that. But fake issues are issues that when I say fake, I don't mean that they're not noteworthy, but I mean that they're used to kind of polarize, and it's kind of like lip service. I don't know if you know what I mean. Yeah. So no, I feel like gay marriage was a fake issue where, of course, a human being and another human being under the Constitution should be allowed to be married. But hey, let's cater to this religious base and like kind of rile them up. And I think abortion is also what I call a fake issue where, hey, Roe v. Wade passed, the Supreme Court passed it, it's over, get over it. Yet it's still kind of one of these issues that is what I call a fake issue. It's just brought up to kind of stir the shit pot.
Yeah, no, Karl Rove called them wedge issues.
Wedge issues, okay.
And it was a big part of the both Bush campaigns was to focus on these wedge issues because they figured that they were going to lose to Gore. And so their strategy was we're going to identify these issues that piss off and rile up conservatives, and we're going to just talk about that, and then we're going to make those things into an issue. So you're absolutely right. Like it, there's
I don't want to call it fake because that makes it
right.
sound like I don't care. But I mean, I don't
You
know
do
if
care. I
I
know
don't
you
know if
care.
I don't know. Oh, you're so sweet. I don't know if wedge is the right word or fake, but it's, I guess, a
But you're right.
non-issue. Like it's just used to stir the pot, basically. But
Right.
it's not the core of a political issue.
It's not what most people wake up in the morning thinking about, right? Like it's not, unless something is like an immediate threat or immediate danger to them, most people aren't gonna wake up in the morning and be like, yeah, let's stop the Mexicans from coming here.
Well, some people do. So,
Well,
there's those
yeah.
militia men, those fake. Did you hear about the
Right.
militia men who like go down to the border and they're like not part of the
Yeah.
US military? They're like, hey, just random guy with
I
a
think those guys are terrorists. I've said this before and I've gotten some shit for it, but I think those dudes are terrorists. They should be in jail. You should not be able to arm yourself with like a fucking assault rifle and patrol the border.
Unfortunately, I also think guns are a fake issue, a wedge issue, a
Yeah,
non-issue
well, they
issue,
are.
where it's like shut up, sit down, calm
Right.
down. No one's gonna take your guns. Calm down.
Right, exactly. Although I would. Like, if I was in charge, I would probably, like, come and take everyone's gun. I'm convinced that Americans are cannot be trusted.
I do think that there is a lot of misuse of gun handling. I mean, this is not a gun control issue
Yeah, right.
episode, so I don't want to go too much into it, but I do think immigration is a shit stir issue. I mean, obviously people's lives are affected by it, and there's people that are seeking refugee from extreme and dangerous circumstances, but I do think that it's one of those issues that is not a main issue that's used to kind of stir the pot. And it's just I think that
It's
that's
spot on.
why I don't really understand, like, who cares? I mean, not who cares about these immigrants, but I mean, who like you said, it's like, is anyone waking up passionate about defending the border? I don't know.
Right. Well, unless you're like super racist, like that 2% of the 40% or whatever they are that support Trump, like they might wake up in the morning looking for ways to dick over immigrants, but the majority of Americans are not. And
Well,
you're spot on. You're right. Like these are things that are intentionally designed to anger people and stir up the base.
here's what irritates me about humanity. All right, I'm going to go off on a humanity tangent.
Okay.
Is that there was a study that every new indoctrinated immigrant like hates the new group of immigrants. So
Yes.
the
Yes.
Irish, right, they were like hated Irish Catholics, and then once they felt indoctrinated, then they hate the Latinos and like whatever is the new group
Yeah.
like ends up what's called internalizing the nationality and then hating on the next group, which I just think is absolutely crazy.
Yeah. No, it's stupid, but it's we've seen it throughout American history. The Irish and the Italians and then my people, the Eastern Europeans. So since yeah, it's very much since like the beginning, we've seen that. And there's so many places I can go. I'm watching the clock though, so I'm like, so let me just I'll stay on target. The question was who cares, and so the answer, and Rutger Bregman talks about this, is economists would care if you were to eliminate the border, because his argument is that you would triple their earning potential of someone by allowing them to freely move from one country to another, as opposed to the like. I think it's like a 100-mile radius, 200-mile radius that most people spend their entire lives in.
That's really sad, by the way. But what
Right. Yeah.
he doesn't really explain that, and that's the issue I
Yes.
have with that, is that he says, "Hey, having open borders is going to make the economy grow." And my question is how?
Right. So the idea is that you're, if I'm able to pick up, and I don't mean to keep picking on Mexico, so let's pick on the Canadians. Because I like Mexico. My best friend in high school.
Defending Mexico. You're not picking on them, but yes,
Yeah.
they are the main target in this
Right.
conversation.
Because you and I grew up in a country that's constantly vilified them. So
But
I
let's
think
talk
it's.
about just general open borders because there may be people internationally who are listening to this. How does this apply to them? So forget about Mexico. Let's just talk about, say I live
Right.
in South America. Say I live in South
So,
America in like Chile or something.
it's sort of like, well, I'll give you an example that's related to that. So, like, my brother, not my brother, sorry. I am like, you're catching me at the end of the workday, and I'm already kind of like worked up and agitated.
I hear you. You're like very passionate.
It's a whole thing. Like my cousin, right, was born on Long Island, came from a middle class family. He wound up going to Denmark and finding a career there and starting a family. And, had he not done that, there's certainly this question of within the United States and with the way the United States economy has gone, would he have met the earnings output that he has by going overseas and finding opportunity? And so that, that would circle back to like people in Chile or people in South Africa, that relocated here from elsewhere, right? Like where they're able to find better paying jobs, and that creates an actual spillover into the larger economy, where because they have a better paying job, they're able to put more money into the local economy, which puts more money into the national economy, and on and on and on. Does that make sense?
Yes, you're saying that if someone can move about freely, then they can increase their earnings potential.
Yes, because there's at least on paper anyway, there is more opportunity, financial and economic opportunity than there would be. And I mean, that's certainly true. I mean, no matter how upset and miserable we like to think when we're in the United States, we're an order of magnitude wealthier than a lot of people in a lot of places around the world. And so you're talking about like a significant improvement for a lot of people that would be able to come here without having to go through immigration, without having to go through customs and getting a visa and just going through that process. And then that money then going back into the community.
Okay, I'm going to play a little bit of devil's advocate
Sure,
here.
yeah.
Okay, but doesn't that just further depress the countries that they're coming from? And the example I'll actually give is the United States of America, because a lot of the high-paying jobs are in the coastal regions, and we've seen a lot of middle America kind of being gutted out because younger millennials and other people are going to LA or San Francisco or New York to find good jobs. And so those areas are being hollowed out. Wouldn't that kind of be similar to maybe moving from a developing country to using an open border to go to a better country, and then you're instead of just staying where you are and improving where you live currently. I don't know if I agree with this or disagree with it. I'm just putting it
Right.
out there.
No, it's a great point, and I don't have a good answer for you. My initial knee jerk, because this is what we do on the show,
We just make up facts.
we just make shit up, and then we make shit up. You decide, which is what Fox News' slogan should be, but it's not.
Not compare us to Fox News. Okay.
So my knee jerk reaction to that is that since the 1970s, the wages of most Americans has remained stagnant, if not gotten worse than what it's been because of severe income inequality. So it's hard to say if that hollowing out is happening because people are migrating to the cities, or the hollowing out is happening because of this wage stagnation, which is in turn causing the migration to these other cities. So I don't know. I think that's a great question and something that will take like an entire doctoral thesis to answer.
We'll
And
have
we
to do
don't,
research for next time.
yeah, I don't know. We'll be able to answer. So, but yeah, I'm not sure. I don't think so. I mean, I mean, yes, there would be like a brain drain, right? Like we hear about that in upstate New York all the time. There's a brain drain in upstate New York, and everyone's going to New York City or Buffalo because there's nothing in, there's less and less in between. Then there's the entrepreneur in me who says, all right, well, then that shouldn't that be an opportunity to reinvent yourself? Like, shouldn't that be the opportunity for the country to be like, oh, no, go ahead, go to the United States. We're going to make things better here so that you don't want to leave. And we're starting to see that under Trump, where the people who could come here, who are expertly qualified, have not. Simply because they've decided the United States, and rightfully so, is a bit of a shithole, and so they've stayed behind because the grass is greener, and their home countries have made it more incentive for them to stay. Like Ireland, Ireland is a great example of just putting all these incentives in place and saying, look, we know you can leave the United States, but we think it's better here. So I don't know. I think it's like one of those multifaceted issues, but that's just what I think on it. What do you think?
I have no idea. I really have never thought of open borders a day in my life until you brought it up. And so I have been reading about it and kind of hypothesizing what my beliefs are on it. And I, you know, sometimes you just don't have a strong belief on something. But for me, I believe, I do think we should have borders, because I think that if you're here, it's all about the tax system. So ideologically, I don't think any border should exist, because they really don't exist. It's just a line that some government drew. But more realistically, I think that there should be some type of semi-closed border system because of tax revenue. So that's where I get kind of like, I don't know, but hey, change my mind. Like, I do think that there is a bit of a racialized war when it comes to nationalism and borders. I think that that is not a good thing, for sure.
Yeah, I think that to me is, like, first and foremost, we were there. I mean, it goes back to the Canada example, right? Like, there's been documentaries about how, and I don't mean to pick on my friends who live on the reservation up in Hogansburg or Akwesasne, the Mohawks, in upstate New York. And for people who are not familiar, so there is a Mohawk reservation that straddles the United States and Canada at the very northern tip of New York State, which is a Mohawk reservation. And what happens is the St. Lawrence Seaway will freeze over, and people will get on their speedboats from Canada who have, like, drugs, and they will come over. They will come over through the reservation where the tribal police don't, for whatever reason, stop those people. And there's been a couple of documentaries about this. Now, that same thing happens in Mexico all the time, but we freak out when Mexican people are doing it, but we don't say shit when Canadian people are doing it, you know? So that, you know, when you talk about the racialization and that aspect of it, the same shit goes on at the northern border that goes on at the southern border, but we don't have the militarization because, you know, we want to villainize brown people.
I think that there is a villainization, but I'm not sure the cause of it. I don't know. I don't know if it's just that look over here so you're distracted.
That's definitely part of it. I think that, so you have to remember that the United States after...
Because this this is very difficult for me because I'm a brown person. Yeah. But Asians are kind of like the weirdo minority where white society is like, I know there's a lot of racism and stuff with, there has been racism with the Chinese Exclusion Act and certain things like that. But for some reason in modern day society, white America has been like, hey, Asians, you guys are cool. We don't hate you as much.
What is that? I think what is the term they call it? The model minority.
Model minority. And so it's like kind of a weird place to be as a minority because other minorities kind of don't see us as minorities, but we still get racism kind of, but we're like accepted kind of. So it's a really bizarre place in society. It's like we have a different viewpoint, I think, than other people. We're not part of mainstream white America, but we are, but we're not. But people don't see us as not. So it's really a weird place.
Well, you know who that reminds me of?
What? Who?
My people.
The Jews. Exactly. You guys are exactly in the same boat as us because you guys, there's a lot of anti-Semitism. A lot of people, you know, have anti-Jewish hatred, racism, whatever. But you guys are kind of white. Like, let's be real. But you're kind of not.
Yeah, we're like, my ex-wife described me as like off-white. Because I'm yellow.
You're basically Asian.
I am. Right? Well, so fun fact, I'm Russian. So
okay, you're basically Asian. Russians are basically Europe plus Asia had sex.
Yes, I am. I am. I'm a white Asian.
You guys are still a little. I think it would be like European white Jews, Asian. You know, like I feel like you guys are more. Because you could pass for white, like you just look like a white guy. So I think there's more of that, but there's still that anti-Semitism as well. So it's like a weird. I think Asians are more close to the minority side, and you guys are more close to the white side. But yes, we're in the same boat.
Yeah. So it reminds me of it's a little bit of a detour into history, right? So after the Civil War, do I just want to start there or hold on? I'm sorry. I'm thinking it through. Because I could do like an entire book on this and I don't want to. Okay, so During the Civil War, one of the things that happens to reunify the country is that, for lack of a better description, the North and the South were both really racist, right? Like, it's become like cool to edit out that the North was really racist too.
Yes, and that bothers me. But thank you for saying that, because yes, okay, we could go off, and I could go off on a tangent about this, but yes, just being from the South. And, you know, being from Louisiana and hearing all that, but there's a lot. Yes, I'm disagreeing.
Yeah. No. So like, and I would argue that the North was probably more racist because it's more insidious. It was more, it wasn't out in the open.
Instead of slavery, they're like, hey, let's just do indentured servitude and like corporate wage slavery. But it's basically the same thing.
Let's do redlining. Let's do quotas. You know, let's not show apartments to certain people. Right. Like that's not to say that both, you know, one is better than the other. They're both horrible. But the difference is that the South was sort of out front, and particularly the rich South, not the poor South, but the rich South was out front with their really crazy and insane beliefs. And the North was pretending to be like this opening and welcoming society and not at all. It was in some places, but not all. So one of the things that brought the country together, though, one was commerce, but two was sort of this nationalized identity of Americans. Because before the Civil War, people didn't identify as American. They identified as, you know, I'm a Virginian, I'm from Louisiana, I'm from, California wasn't really a thing for a lot of that time.
No, but they would say, I'm from the Wild West. What's up?
That's right. I got from Wild West, and but they didn't say I'm an American. And so after the Civil War, this identity began to be forged of an American. And at around the same time as when you started to have, like, in the 1870s, 1880s, 1890s, people were talking about, I mean, they were talking about it before with the South, but it really picked up after the Civil War of eugenics and white supremacy. It started to trickle more into the mainstream. Stanford University's president, for example, founded the university based around the ideas of eugenics and white supremacy. And so, like, this part in that forming of the national identity was commerce, but this other identity was, if you're an American, you're white, and you weren't really.
I thought that started in the 1600s.
So
with Bacon's Rebellion and the government. The governors of Virginia and New York and everyone trying to suppress indentured servitude revolts, because the indentured servants and slaves were like, hey, I'm white and you're black, but like, we're basically both slaves. And there was these rebellions in the colonies. This was pre-US.
Yes, but you're right. What they didn't have, though, wasn't quite codified, right?
Because it was just colonies at that time.
Yeah, like at that time, it was very much like, hey, why are you going against your own interests? They didn't say that you were white, right? Because like, white was a concept that came later.
But I also thought, I mean, our country is, we're kind of like Australia. We're like, we were white, but we were like the white rejects.
Right, that's right.
Like, or people were sent over here as a debt prison, like, sentence in Europe.
Right.
You want to serve this debt prison here in the shackles, or do you want to go to the States? All right, we'll go to the States.
And I mean, that's true. Like, if you go back into the 1600s to the period that I'm not talking about, you're absolutely right. Like, there's definitely like the exclusionary aspect to all those cultures that came over here, right? Like the Pilgrims,
So we were always rednecks. What happened?
We've always been like crazy religious fanatics. Like, it is baked into the DNA. Like, the state of Connecticut would not exist if not for like Anne Hutchinson being kicked out from.
We've always been dumb. We've always been religious. Yes. America, so, fuck yeah!
Exactly. Maybe we should play that clip. Can we like fair use that clip? For this episode. Okay, so let me, I just want to play.
I like how you're like trying to make a serious point. Okay, sorry.
No, but you're right. Like, we've always been like fucking stupid, right? And it's to our detriment that we haven't recovered from that. And I don't know if we ever will, honestly. But so what happened was, the difference between what was going on in the 1600s and what happened in the late 1800s going into the early 1900s is that it became something that There was books that came out, right? Like it was something that became standardized, and it became widespread, not just among like the educated and the rich, but it became something that was just everywhere. You're white, and white people are better, and and then people started to bring religion into it, as they always do in the United States, and they were starting to find reasons in the Bible for segregation, which is what they one of the things that they did down in Georgia. So it's one of the things that they started writing down and saying, okay, these are actual legitimate differences, quote unquote legitimate, between what is an American and what is not. And then from there, we just started cracking down left and right on every group that didn't fit in. And we haven't quite gotten back from that. But the border is definitely part of that, right? Like the border is definitely baked into that whole, well, if you're an American and you're white and you're on this side of the border, and if you're on the other side of the border, you're not American, therefore you're inherently bad.
That is a good point. What do you say, though, about so obviously it's a racist idea to think that all immigrants are criminals. That's not true. But what do you say to address criminals that do come here? How what and because that's an argument for having security at the border. And unfortunately, I personally know several criminals who came here illegally and have been deported. I'm laughing because it's funny, but it's also horrible. One of my friend's ex-husband was a felon and kept committing crimes and kept getting deported and kept having to sneak back in. It's awful.
I mean, we talked about this one of the earlier shows, right? Like that 99.9% people are good, or the 99% people are good, but that 1% are all assholes. There's always going to be assholes in every group, no matter where you're from or what you look like. And so when I say that there shouldn't be a border, I'm not saying that like the FBI and the CIA and anyone else who are the shit, who are they? The
The INS or whatever.
yeah,
They can
INS.
still do their job. What you're saying,
Right.
what I hear you saying is that the, I guess the over-securitization is unnecessary and it's a waste of
Yes.
money.
Right, like if you're a criminal, you're a criminal. You'll commit a crime, you'll get caught, and if you do something severe, you'll be kicked out, right? Like that's, but to punish 99% of the other people with the assumption that they're all criminals, which is what Trump's whole thing is, that to me is just insane. Like it's just, I can think of my cousin who's like a deadbeat criminal, and he's been to jail and grew up in an affluent house, right? Like he would not think like,
Is
so.
your cousin gonna listen to this podcast?
No. And if he is, fuck him. Because he's a piece of shit.
Okay, what about the argument? Okay, I'm just playing devil's advocate. I don't agree with this point of view. What about the argument that if we open the borders, we're going to be flooded with
Yes,
refugees and all
so.
these and these and these bad hombres
Yeah, well, so this is the thing that came up with the Syrian refugees,
that
right? Like
come marching in?
this
What if,
yeah.
BJ?
Like to me, I think we talked about this too, where you could fit the entire population of the earth comfortably within Alaska and give everyone like 100 acres.
Are we
So
moving to Alaska?
I kind of want to. I kind of liked it, honestly. I really liked it. I came away thinking that like I would live here. Like I really, really liked it. But my point being is that the United, I think it's even though I tell people that the planet is too small for your bullshit, and I stand by that, the United States is still pretty fucking big, right? And it's still mostly uninhabited. So this idea that there's no space kind of drives me crazy. Like there's plenty of space, but then people go, "All right, well, what if we don't have the infrastructure?" Up until like I've gotten into the debate on Twitter, right, with people about open borders, and I've always heard that, "What if we get overrun? What if there's no supplies? What if there's nowhere for them to live?" We all on and on and on. But I think that in the event of an emergency, in the event, let's say like the worst comes with climate change, right, and we get 100 million climate refugees, and a lot of them are going to come here. And we get into like a true global emergency. I think the thing we saw with the COVID emergency is that we can act.
I think
We
what we
do.
saw with the COVID emergency is we are overloaded and we can't afford any more people
Well,
coming here.
okay, so let me, no, I think that's
Unprepared for who we
so.
have here already.
Yeah, okay. What? Yes, on one hand, right? Like, It's hard to argue that. Yeah, like it's like
we're
you
totally
and
fucked. And once this world starts blowing up, we're totally fucked even more.
Yeah, though I feel, you know, like
stay where you're at and don't come near me.
A friend of mine who has money said to me, "Oh yeah, I left the country like a month ago, and he's living."
Let me tell you something. Okay, so yes. I know you're going out, but let me tell you something. So one thing about the argument that did make me become a selfish asshole. I'm sorry, BJ. I'm an evil person like everyone else that you hate. Is that so? He was making the argument in the book about, you know, there's so much income inequality in the world, and people could come to the developing world to the developed world and increase their income and get better jobs. Right. And I found myself being really selfish, and I had a thought where I was like, I don't want them to take my shit.
Well, sure. No, I mean, everyone has that thought, right? And that's an okay thought
to
have.
Stay where you are in your third world economy.
Well, well, that part isn't okay.
I had that thought. And so I don't know if I'm part of the problem, but I had that thought.
No, because we're all hardwired for that, right? We're hardwired to be like, okay, this stuff is mine. And, you know, I need this stuff to survive, and I don't want it to be taken from me. Like, that's a completely legitimate thing to have. And that's part of the problem too, right? Is that everyone is hardwired that way. And so you've got these bad actors who come in and play on that and use that to manipulate people. But I think in the event of a climate emergency where we suddenly had like millions of refugees streaming in from over the border because the southern part of the earth was uninhabitable, we really would be able to help them. And
well,
so
let's talk about a climate emergency because the climate emergency has happened, multiple climate emergencies. There's been tsunamis. There's been hurricanes. There's been destruction of Haiti and other, you know, areas of the world. And the world lifts up and puts its humanitarian hands together and helps these areas out. Is this just something that with open borders, you're saying that we should just do this all the time?
Yeah, I do. I think that
I think yours is a very philosophical argument. You're saying, hey, we should be one world.
Yes. Well, because I want to go to space. I want to go to space, motherfuckers.
Oh, my God. That's why you want everyone here kumbaya, and then you're like, later, bitches. Me and Elon Musk are out of here.
Well, not later, bitches. I think that the...
You guys all get along. I'm going to Mars, baby.
Right. Well, yeah. I totally am. Like, I'm out the door. Peace out, all. But no, but also, like... No, but also like the way to get, because we're, you know, there's that quote I heard recently. I forgot who said it, but they said that an asteroid is always a good reminder of how that space program is coming along.
Okay.
Yeah, like it's always a good reminder. You better get your shit together, and I want us to get our shit together. So my attitude is more, the faster we get past like these petty. Okay, let me back up.
Petty. That's what I would call these issues.
Yes,
petty political issues. Thank you. That's the word.
That's what they're like. So, okay, so like when we...
Like
when
gay marriage, really? Who cares? Who cares?
Right, like you should be able to get married. Like
who the fuck cares? Do you care about that? That's what I would call these issues. I would call immigration a petty issue. It's like as long as the person is not a criminal, like who the fuck cares, right?
Right, exactly. You should be able to marry whoever you want. You should be able to live wherever you want. Like that. Those are things that I think. But
petty. I would call them who cares issues.
So when we came, when we were early humans,
okay, back
right?
to Mars.
Yeah, boy. Oh, I'll get to Mars in a second. Okay. But when we crossed the land bridge, here we can tie back to Alaska. When we crossed the land bridge, or it wasn't really kind of a bridge.
The Bering Strait.
Yeah, it's also not that people. I think people don't understand how big that thing was, that allowed humans to cross over from Asia into North America. But like, we didn't have borders then. Like that was the way that people moved. That's the way that humanity migrated for who knows how many thousands of years. So to me,
millions
just,
of years,
right? For millions. So to me, it's just sort of asinine to all of a sudden be like, no, you can't come here.
I totally agree with you. Again, philosophically, my realistic issue is an issue of taxation and government.
Okay.
That's the issue that I'm like. Philosophically, I get your point. I totally agree. But on a realistic level, okay, if we're paying taxes and then like people from, I don't know, wherever are coming here. Like, that's what I don't understand. That's so, how I don't understand how to work that out in my head.
Yeah, no, and that's fair. I think that that's what most people circle back to. So if you put aside Rucker Bregman saying, well, 10x the earnings potential of the country that has open borders because all these people will double their earning potential by coming here. Let's put that aside. So there's this question of like what we can and can't pay for, which we've talked about a lot on this show. Like it's been like one of those big reoccurring themes that we keep touching on. And so my attitude is, there is plenty of money if we were to increase the tax rate back to, like, let's say Eisenhower levels, and if you don't want to go that far, to pre-Reagan levels. That alone should be able to fund first UBI and other things that we want here in the United States for our people. But then if you were to look at all the unpaid back taxes from these multi-billion dollar corporations, I think the money is there. I really do. I think that...
Yes, the money is there. I agree with you. I think there's a lot of money and there's a lot of wasted money. So that goes back to my original political rant at the beginning of this episode is,
yeah, right.
I don't care about big government. I don't care about small government. I care about effective government.
Exactly.
Why are we wasting money on these things? If you're saying, you know, if what Rutger Bergman is saying is that securing the border is a waste of money and it's not even effective, it's not even keeping people out, I agree with you. Get rid of it. Get rid of the program. We need to, this is a tangent off of all of our episodes. How many episodes have we have? 9, 12? I don't even
know. This is number nine.
Out of all of our episodes, my rant has been the same thing. Why don't we all get together? We already have this awesome thing called the UN. We all get together, figure out what works in every country, and then everyone just do that.
Right.
Just do what works. If it doesn't work, don't do it.
We talked about that with the prisons, right? Like, close all the prisons except for the 1% of the planet that wants to be an asshole.
Just do what works. That's it.
Yeah.
Done. All the world's problems solved in 3 months. Let's do this.
Yeah, that's the frustrating thing. Like, that's so here, circling back to
we have the technology. We have the internet. We have the information. We actually, I believe, I can't remember who it was, but I was watching some documentary and it was a world leader. I can't remember. This was like in 1970. He's like, we have all the technology in 1970 to solve all the world's problems right now.
Yeah. No, right. Like in the 1930s, they were talking about universal basic income, right? Like it is not a new concept. They were talking about people being automated out of work very early on. So I think that's the thing.
How do we get special interests to go away so that we can just do what's best for everyone? I don't understand. How do we do this?
Right. Well, so that's right. Like that's the. I want guillotines personally. I think the COVID crisis.
Okay, did we go from I want to help everyone to
hold on. Well, let me.
Violence.
Okay. So. Okay. Here's my thing. I am. In almost entirely pacifist. I think with the exception of.
Except for cutting people's heads off.
Yes, with the exception of like the super wealthy, right? Like when you hear that 800 people can hold more wealth than like a third of the planet, that you're talking about like how do we solve these problems? Well, the problem is that the money is being sat on by these rich assholes who are telling us to go back to work in the middle of the deal. If you wonder why people were like during the COVID crisis, you need to go back to work and then we need to save the economy. It's because that the world is framed through the lens of rich people.
I disagree with you on that, BJ. I don't think that that's necessarily true because that is assuming that money can solve all problems and money cannot solve all problems.
True. That's certainly true.
So I disagree with you on that one. And there are a lot of rich people that do good. There are a lot of rich people that are evil, but there are a lot of rich people that do good. But I don't like that because even though I'm very passionate about UBI, I do not think money solves all problems. And
that's fair.
And I've had money and I've not had money. And I still had problems both times.
Yeah, no, it's certainly true. And I don't think that money would solve all the problems. I think it would put it in the right direction, right? Like it would, when I mentioned the joke about like how's that space program coming, we haven't been to the moon in like nearly 50 years.
Have we ever been to the moon?
Yeah.
That's another podcast episode.
It was a sound set in Santa Barbara. Anyway,
you're getting very riled, BJ. I've never heard you this riled on a podcast.
Because you're catching me after work at a particularly stressful day.
We usually do it in the morning. We usually do the podcast in the morning.
On the weekends where I've had coffee and I had a full 8 hours of sleep. And
you didn't get your nap today.
No, that's right. We're recording this right when I should be napping. So that's awesome. It's also a big part.
I've never heard you like this in our, what, 7 years of friendship? How long have we known each other?
I've known you since 2012, so yeah, about 7, going on 8 years.
In our 8 years of friendship, I've never heard you like this. You're
It's
so
because
wild.
I haven't had my nap. It's like if we were living together, this is the time of the day that I would be napping for exactly this reason, so I wouldn't be crying. I'm like an old man.
It's not just, you do sound very cranky, but you're very passionate.
Well, it reminds me of I used to make fun of my grandfather when he would sleep over, and during the day he would just like pass out at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, fall asleep on the couch watching TV, and you couldn't watch the one TV that worked because he was sleeping on the fucking couch. I like there's nothing you could do about it, because what you can do, he's your grandfather, he's old, you can't wake him up because who knows, he'll have a heart attack or something.
Are
So
you
yeah.
hopped up on coffee right now?
No, I'm riled up from
You're
work.
very riled up about open borders. Okay, let's talk about Mars and then we gotta wrap up.
So
Mars.
like we haven't gotten to the moon in nearly 50 years, right? And so the money doesn't solve all the problems. What the money does is it reorients the things that we prioritize, right? So instead of prioritizing a payroll tax, we would prioritize the space program. We would prioritize getting the moon set up to be a refueling station for us to go to these other places, because we know the Earth is eventually fucked, right? Like we've talked about all these different things on the show,
The
and
Earth
it
is
could
eventually fucked. I totally agree with you. The
yeah
Earth is
if you
eventually fucked. Okay, keep going. Keep going. You're
yeah no
riled.
so like we know we have to leave, right? Bottom line, our well, you and I aren't having kids, but like my niece's generation, your niece's generation, like they are probably the last ones that are going to be able to have the Earth be somewhat sustainable. Like their kids, if they have kids, are going to have to deal with all sorts of insane shit because of climate change and everything else, and who knows if there's an asteroid. So the bottom line is we have to get off the planet, and the faster that we all cooperate together is how we get off the planet. So that, the reason why I'm so passionate about the open borders is because it's one step closer to that. It's like it's one step closer to, oh wait, we have 6 million Syrian refugees. Oh, instead of being shitty about taking them in, we should just take them in and set them up and cooperate and work together. And the sooner that we start the process of everyone fusing together, which is a beautiful thing that happens, the sooner we can get off the planet and survive as a species. So,
I definitely think we all need to work together. I think that there's a lot of petty issues that people, not just Americans, deal with, and I agree with you on that I think that we as a society need to see each other as one race, one ethnicity. Sorry, this is a kumbaya moment, but everyone is pretty much the same.
yeah, that's what I want. Yeah, exactly.
And so I think that, it's this is going to sound horrible, but it's like when I hear about Palestine and Israel fighting, and I just want to tell them, motherfucker, most people can't tell you guys apart anyway. You're basically brothers, so just get over
That's right.
it. Just get
That's right.
over it. Just hug it out, okay? Just hug it out. It's like if you had someone in front of me that was Palestinian or someone that was Israel, I honestly could not tell the difference because
Right.
they're
That's right.
probably more similar than they are different, especially because they're both Middle Eastern cultures. I'm sure there's differences, but I'm sure you wouldn't be able to tell much of a difference. Just like, the Chinese and the Vietnamese fought forever. And it's like, come on, like you're probably related. So,
That's right.
and so it's in a way, it's like we all should be working together. But I think, I guess my question is still a logistical one. I do agree that if something doesn't work, stop doing it. And I think that, I mean, your idea, we're all fucked, so we should just work together so we can get off this planet.
Yes, that's a perfect way to summarize it. That's exactly right. That's it in a nutshell.
I mean, I would hope that we could still save planet Earth. I it's not looking that good, but
You're right.
my thing, I think I've said this on episodes in the past, is I think we're just all going to kill each other off, and then Mother Earth is going to cover herself in vines and like heal herself, and then like a new species is going to start. So I think Earth will be fine. It's just we'll be fucked.
Yeah, that's the old George Carlin thing, right? See, I've managed to get a mention of him in every episode. Every episode.
Have a man crush,
I really do.
George
I really
Carlin.
do. But I also like mentally made it a point where he's like, how can I work him into every episode? And I did it, right? Because this is our season finale, isn't it?
It is our season finale, but you didn't say how you worked him in. You're just like George
Oh
Carlin
yeah,
said, nanny nanny
yeah.
boo boo.
All right. So no, he had the whole thing. He has this whole routine where like the planet is fine, the people are fucked.
Yeah, I did. I know that routine.
Yeah, so like that's exactly the routine. Like that's exactly it. So I think that he would agree with you. I think that most scientists would agree with you. Like the
Because the Earth can
probability.
heal itself. There's so, there,
Yes.
you know, there's algae that can eat pollution. There's different things. They're trying to synthesize those algae and other things right now
Yes,
to
sir.
help clean water and do other things. But the Earth has always been good at healing itself. It's miraculous, and actually one of the reasons that I switched from atheism to spirituality because I started seeing the science of how the Earth is kind of like this magical living like spirit, kind of like in what was that?
Fern Gully,
Yeah, like a Fern Gully kind of thing. Yes.
AKA Avatar,
Avatar type
right?
thing.
Yeah,
So I
Avatar
do
is just Fern Gully.
Avatar is live action Fern Gully.
Yeah, it
You're right.
really is.
You're right. It totally is. But so I feel that yeah, we're just fucked. And I think that probably, 80% of the Earth's population will probably be wiped out, and then whoever's left, and we'll just start over again. And hopefully the people that start over again will listen to this podcast and be like, oh yeah, we should do those things.
That is a very good segue.
Maybe someone will listen to this podcast, and then once everyone gets destroyed, they'll be like, oh, Rosie and BJ did have some really good ideas. Let's save the world and take some of their ideas and put it in the new civilization now that everyone's been killed by a pandemic.
Yeah, no, I'm all for it. By the way, it's like stuff like that has happened too. I forget the name of the volcanic explosion that happened like 600,000 years ago, but it wiped out almost the entire human species. And so it turns out that,
And there was a podcast that saved everyone.
yeah, that's right. It was a podcast. And the podcast said that everyone is related to like the same 600 people that survived that volcanic explosion. So yeah, no, the probability is pretty high that that's what the
Maybe we'll be the new Bible.
maybe.
And they'll be
You
like, and Rosie and BJ said on the first day, let there be UBI. And there was UBI.
know what I don't want though?
Okay.
There was a terrible TV adaptation of Ender's Game. Oh, not Ender's Game. Fuck, what was it? Oh, Childhood's End. And what happens is the guys, the last human survivor says to the alien, but right before the Earth blows up, can you leave something behind to remind people that we exist? And the alien's like, yeah, sure, no problem, boss. So they send the guy to Earth and he dies and the Earth blows up. And then there's like the sound of like jazz music is playing. And that's the thing that's meant to remind people that Earth still exists. Wouldn't it be hilarious if it was like an episode of the podcast? But I think that's probably a worst case scenario. I'd prefer that that not happen. But I'm all for being the new Bible.
Okay, Rosie and BJ save the world. BJ, how can people find you? And also, are you still doing Patreon? No.
No, I'm not. So I feel like a jackass because in every episode I'd be like, I'm on Patreon. No, I am not on Patreon. I decided that
OnlyFans?
oh well, I do qualify for an OnlyFans. It has been suggested to me. It might come to that. It very well might come to that. We'll see. But no, people can follow me on Twitter or Instagram at BJ Mendelsohn. I'm not really doing much of anything besides
You're
writing
not
a book.
doing, you're just hanging out with the cats.
Yes, I'm hanging out with the cats. That's my whole life's goal right now.
Okay, great. Follow me on Twitter at Funny Rosie. I have another podcast called Out of the Box Podcast. We currently don't have any new episodes, but there's over 100 episodes and some pretty amazing guests. So check that one out. This has been Rosie and BJ Save the World. Thanks for listening and do your best, please, to go out and do some good and try to save the world until next season. We'll talk to you guys then. Bye.